Start the meeting now at 10:03. The 10:03 on Thursday, May 25th, the Arizona Board for Private Postsecondary Education has commenced. So pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the Arizona Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a board meeting open to the public on the date and time today. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found at ppsc.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during the specific time blocks. The board chair, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. That'd be fun. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice pursuant to Arizona Revised Statute 38-431.03A3. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document, in an alternative format by contacting the executive director, Mr. Kevin LaMountain, at 602-542-5731. And with that, Mr. LaMountain, can you do roll call?
Certainly. Dr. Mittman?
Present.
Dr. Mittman is present. Dr. Leck?
Aye, here.
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Romano. Mr. Romano will be delayed. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. And Mr. Wallace?
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present for staff. Ms. Rome?
Present.
Jacqueline Rome? Present. Keith Blanchard?
Present.
Keith is present. Noel Vetter?
Present.
Noel is present. And Roberto Pulver, Assistant AG.
Okay. And are there any, I'm sorry, did our assistant AG?
Roberto, I see Mr. Pulver, are you on?
I'm on.
All right. Thank you, sir. Nice
You're
to
welcome.
See you. So that is all staff and board members accounted for. Dr. Mittman, if I could, I would also like to state that Mr. Romano will be delayed in attending the meeting today. He will not be on until somewhere between 10:45 and 11. And that would require that we do an adjustment to the agenda. And that adjustment would be moving LS coding from the second school up to sometime later in the morning when Mr. Romano joins us.
Okay, we can do that. Great. And our new assistant attorney general is, I'm sorry, I didn't get the name.
Roberto Pulver. Roberto, do you want to introduce yourself and say, well, I don't know that Dr. Mitt was on last time.
Okay. My name is Roberto Pulver. I'm the assistant attorney general here. I previously worked with various other boards, the medical board, the chiropractic board, the pharmacy board, and a couple other boards. But I'm glad to be here, and whatever service I can provide you, Mr. Chairman and board members, glad to do that.
Okay. Well, like the pizza box says, you've tried the rest, now try the best. So welcome to the to this board.
Very true. Very true.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on, let's see, conflicts of interest. Does anyone have a conflict of interest to declare, any board members? And is this something that we just voice,
yes.
Mr. Lemon?
Yes, just by voice, if there's a conflict.
And hearing none, we'll move on. Next is, can we get an approval of the board minutes? And so these are the audio recordings at the official open minutes of the board meeting from April 27th, 2023. I will make a motion to approve the minutes. Can we get a second?
I'll second, Dr. Leck.
Thank you, Dr. Leck. And Mr. LaMountain, over to you.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. And Mr. Romano is absent. So by the vote of four ayes, one absent, that motion passes.
Great. And then next on the agenda is the Executive Director's Report. Back to you, Mr. LaMountain.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Mittman and members of the board. Thank you very much. In your folder, I provided the information and the report. I wanted to give you an update. We're nearing the end of our fiscal year, and I've provided updates on our finances for both the operations reports and the student tuition recovery fund reporting. As you'll see, we remain in the operations side above revenues and below expenses at this particular point. Our overall appropriation, we're right at about 80% of our total overall appropriation. And being the end of May, we only have one more month to go, plus a small amount into July, which is considered our 13-month window. So we will come about $25,000 under our allotted appropriation by the legislature. So that's about where we wanted to be, where we thought we would be, and what we budgeted to be this year. So we're in a very good position as it relates to that. The Student Tuition Recovery Fund, as I've explained over the last couple of months as we've met, we now are at a point where our fund balance does fall below the $500,000 that is required by statute. Therefore, we will be billing institutions for the upcoming year for the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. Those notices will be put together sometime in early July, with notification going out to the schools by the end of July, with payment that would be required by October 1st. So that information will be going out shortly, you know, when we get into July to the schools. Our current fund balance is $481,271. So back to the, when we initially went to the legislature and requested the increased amounts for the Student Tuition Recovery Fund, we're exactly on track to what our projections were, that we would still need to bill through this particular fiscal year, this upcoming fiscal year in 24. That we would be, barring any catastrophic school closure, that we would be good in the 2025 in terms of not requiring billing in the 2025. So again, we're on track with that, exactly what we told the legislature would be doing and what we explained to the schools that we would be doing as well. So we're right on track with that. I've listed a number of the school closures that we've had, 19 throughout this year, 10 throughout this year that schools have either left Arizona and or closed one of their locations or closed entirely, those being relatively small institutions. We set at 230 schools that we currently license. That will probably change today based upon your recommendations of the three institutions, new institutions that are going to be before you. The one thing that I did want to provide to you, and if you look at number 7 on my report, talks about budget issues for this coming year. We're in a position where we have to move and change software platforms. We were going through a process with one particular platform that the state identified, and the cost associated with that was going to be relatively insignificant. Well, it is looking as though that particular solution is not going to solve what we need it to solve for our schools. That meaning that we will probably be, I've got some requests into the governor's office and to our OSPB group to look for additional funding sources that we may be able to utilize to help us in 24 and in 25. As more information becomes available, I have a number of meetings this week on it. next week on it. So by our next meeting, I should be able to provide you updated information. And then the last piece was our sunset review. The report is going along quite well. We should be done, you know, by the end of June with that, with the anticipation that that will go to you by the end of June, first part of July, and then our we will send it off to the legislature by October 1st. There's some requests that we sent out for supportive letters from our institution. We received quite a few. I've sent a link to you on that so that you could read some of the information that has come in from a number of schools in support of our board and moving forward into next year for the sunset review. So Dr. Mittman, if there's any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Well, thank you for the report. Questions from board members? I guess the only question I have, Mr. LaMountain, is over the last 2 years, we've seen a pretty significant increase in the number of schools licensed by the state. I think a net increase of about 20, you know, even with the handful of school closures. Are you anticipating that to continue? And I'm just wondering from a budgeting standpoint and staffing, do you anticipate that kind of growth and how will that affect your and the staff's abilities?
A good question. Thank you, Dr. Mittman and members of the board. Yes, we currently have about 19 schools that are in the queue. The staff is working on that will be coming before you in one point or another throughout the rest of this year. So we see a number of institutions wanting to come to Arizona, which we're very excited about. Going back to how the budget works, the budget did get approved, so which is good for us because at the staff level, we get to continue to get paid starting July 1st. So we're very excited about that at the staff level, and we thank very much the governor and the legislature for allowing that to happen. But the way we budget is you budget a year out without really knowing, and then you have no ability to really change the structure. The legislature gives you an appropriation, and you have to live within that, even though our revenue is well above our appropriation. So I think we'll be fine, although we do have plans. I did put into a budget that we would potentially add another individual if we needed it in FY25. So right now I think we can get through the next year with the staffing that we have and the individuals, the great individuals that we have on staff right now doing their job. So I think we're good.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Unless there are any other questions, and speak up if you have one, but if there are no other questions, we will move on to the next section to review, discuss, and possibly take action on pending license applications. And so first up is renewal application, and this is for UEI College. And let's see. The folks we see, Jeffrey Bottomer and Fardad Fateri, do you have anyone else here representing the college?
Good morning, Dr. Mittman. Rob okay. Paul here.
Okay.
President of Operations for IEC. And we have several colleagues on the line today. I'll be the primary spokesperson, but others can chime in as well.
Could you just identify them for the minutes record?
Yeah, good morning, Dr. Mittman and commissioners and Director LaMountain. This is Sanjay Sardana. I'm the CFO for UEI College and for IEC.
Good morning, Aaron Mortensen, also appearing for UEI College. I am the general counsel.
Good morning, Krista Jones, the Vice President of Operations for UEI College.
Good morning, Julia Dennison, the campus president for the Mesa campus.
Okay.
Good morning, Darcy Schmitz, the vice president of records management and student finance.
Good morning, Denise Rabello, regional director of regulatory compliance.
Good morning, Joanna Vargas, controller.
Does this look like an all school meeting?
Okay. Dr. Mittman, Fardad Fitteri, I'm the CEO of IEC. I'm present as well. Pleasure to be here.
Great. Thank you. And Mr. Paul, could you just remind me what your title is or role at the...
Yes, sir. I serve as Senior Vice President of Operations for International Education Corporation.
Okay. And you've got Wonder Woman shield in the back just in case you need it, it looks like, or...
Captain America. It fends off the evil forces of student attrition.
Okay. All right, and Mr. LaMountain had a question. Or
Dr. Mittman, thank you. Just as an introduction to this, so typically the UEI College MESA application would be done and conducted at a staff level. Through the report that I provided to the board, there are issues that we are currently looking into and reviewing, and certainly issues that that revolve around the Florida Career College campuses and the challenges that they've had with the Department of Education and funding sources for Title IV that are associated with the ATB ability to benefit tests and such. Most of that information has been provided to you in your folder. Last night or yesterday afternoon, I did receive additional documentation that I put into your folder. So if you look in there will be a section that says new documents, and that would be the information that was presented to us, actually to the Department of Ed yesterday on behalf of IEC.
Okay. Hold on one sec. I'm looking for the new document.
Typically, Dr. Mittman, in the new document folder, there is the FCC reconsideration submissions, and that is the document that basically explains IEC's response to the Department of Education.
Okay. And so thank you for that. Mr. Paul, thanks for – I assume you're going to lead it off. And I know you had until the end of April to appeal the Department of Ed, and so I guess this is the update that you're going to share with us.
Correct. If you're okay, I'll go ahead and proceed with a brief update, and then we're happy to entertain any questions that you may have. I appreciate the opportunity to be here before the board today. As a reminder for the uninitiated, International Education Corporation, also known as IEC, we're the parent organization of UEI College, United Education Institute, U.S. Colleges, Sage Truck Driving School, and Florida Career College, which is the institution in question with the department action. By the way, I'm joining the meeting from my office here at UEI College in Phoenix, Arizona. I'm based at the Phoenix campus and happy to be here with my colleagues today. We're here today at the request, at your request and Mr. LaMountain's request to provide really three updates. One is an update on the Florida Career College U.S. Department of Ed matter. Second, you've asked us to provide an assessment of the financial consequences of that matter, which we're prepared to do. And third, you've asked us to address UEI College's compliance with the 2019 stipulated agreement, which we're also prepared to do. First and briefly, I'll provide an overview of the FCC-US DOE matter. On April 11th, 2023, the U.S. Department of Education issued its decision to deny Florida Career Colleges certification in the Title IV Student Aid Program, citing alleged testing violations with the Ability to Benefit Program, which is also referred to as ATB. IEC and FCC respectfully but vehemently deny this allegation. After receiving the letter, IEC reached out to the department and requested a meeting. They agreed to meet with us, which we very much appreciate, And that meeting took place a couple of weeks ago, May 12th, 2023 in Washington, D.C. It was productive. We were able, for the first time in this process, to share our side of the story. And it's our hope that the department officials now know more about who we really are, which is an organization that's genuinely committed to student success, one that operates with integrity, and one that complies with regulations and standards. During the meeting, department officials expressed an openness to working together with us to identify a resolution, something less extreme than shutting down Florida Career College. They also indicated their willingness to continue the discussions following the submission of our official request for reconsideration, which, as was mentioned, we submitted yesterday, which was ahead of today's deadline. That request for reconsideration is now with the department. And as Mr. LaMountain mentioned, we've shared a courtesy copy with each of the members of the board. Enclosed within that request are exhibits and sworn declarations from more than 285 witnesses, including former ATD students, proctors, and current and former employees. Notably, one of the declarations in support of Florida Career College came from the former executive director of the Florida Commission for Independent Education, also known as CIE, which is FCC's state licensing authority. I'll hit on some of the highlights of our submission, but before we touch on that, a couple of points I'd like to emphasize. I think most are aware, but just in case, though FCC and UEI College are both owned by IEC, there are no FCC campuses in Arizona. And FCC is part of a separate OPEID from UEI College here in Arizona. Second, after we received the denial letter on April 11th, out of an abundance of caution, IEC made the voluntary decision to immediately pause enrollment of ATD students at all of its institutions, including the Arizona-based UEI colleges. With that said, allow me to summarize the key themes of the request for reconsideration document that we submitted to the department yesterday. Starting with a quick look back, IEC, the parent company, acquired Florida Career College in 2014. At that time, FCC was a distressed asset as the prior owner was facing bankruptcy. The transaction received expedited approval from the Department of Education based on IEC's financial strength and compliance and regulatory track record. IEC immediately invested well over $10 million to save the FCC campuses and to save the FCC students. We removed or replaced most every management level employee at FCC at that time, and immediately began to instill the IEC company culture of compliance and ethics. Today, FCC trains approximately 4,000 students at 11 campuses in entry-level healthcare, business, skilled trades, and information technology programs. Since the acquisition, FCC has demonstrated strong student outcomes shown through its graduation and placement rates, a positive history of visits and audits by each of the school's accreditors and regulators, and compliance with the department's own mandates of institutional quality, including cohort default rates, composite score, 90-10 compliance, and third-party financial aid audits. In their letter, the department alleges several instances of proctors helping students during the ATB test, and they infer that these isolated occurrences are indicative of some sort of widespread systematic scheme by IEC and FCC. This is not the case, and the evidence simply doesn't support that conclusion. Mr. LaMountain mentioned this, but ATB is a testing process that allows students without a high school diploma or equivalent to receive Title IV student financial aid, provided they pass a department-approved ATB standardized test. And as part of the ATB process, FCC, Florida Career College, contracted with a third-party testing administrator that third party was responsible for employing the proctors, ensuring that they were properly certified and trained, and for scheduling the proctors. Notably, out of more than 45,000 ATB tests administered at FCC over the course of more than 7 years, the department cites 11 test takers who were allegedly assisted by proctors. This represents 0.02% of the total tests taken. Also, of that same approximately 45,000 ATB tests taken, approximately 19,000 test takers failed the ATB test. Now, this is consistent with national averages for ATB test pass rates. So if there were a systemic issue, you would expect to see it reflected in above average pass rates, which is not the case. Also of note, several witnesses that attested to statements that were attributed to them claimed that those were not true and that the information they provided to the department was actually the opposite, that no misconduct took place. It also turns out that several of the witnesses identified in the denial letter were never actually interviewed by the department. And there's a similar situation with the proctor witnesses. Out of hundreds of proctors, the department's denial letter describes four proctors helping students with answers. In our response, as you'll review it, you'll see that two of those four proctors attest under oath that the statements attributed to them by the department are not accurate. Also, in the submission, you're going to find sworn testimony from 100 former students who took the ATB test, 34 proctors, and more than 135 former and current employees who all attest to no proctor assistance. My last point here, for the sake of time, is this. We don't claim to be a perfect organization. IEC and FCC are comprised of human beings who occasionally make errors in judgment. They're not aligned with the training and the policies and the practices of the organization. When these rare situations come to our attention, they're dealt with quickly and severely. FCC has a no-tolerance policy for compliance violations. Given that, even if all the examples provided by the department are accurate, and we have provided substantial evidence that the majority are not, these issues are clearly not systemic, and denial of Title IV recertification is vastly out of proportion to the circumstances. So we hope to hear from the department soon with their response to our request for reconsideration. And of course, we'll keep this board updated on further developments. Related to this matter, you've asked that we provide an assessment of the financial consequences of the FCC US DOE matter. And to do that, I'd like to turn it over to our Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Sanjay Sardana. And after Sanjay's comments, we'll pause for any questions on this topic.
Okay.
Thank you, Rob.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Rob. Good morning again, everyone. As Rob mentioned, we had successfully closed our FCC program review in July of 2022. Which was initially initiated in March of 2015. Unfortunately, the very next day after closing our program review, the department placed FCC on 8CM2, which was quite unusual. In any case, we have built a very good relationship and process with the department so far. We're working very closely with our analyst at the department. So far, we have made 7 submissions for 8CM2, to the department. 5 of them have been paid in full with no findings. The department did note and had us adjust our Parent Plus notification, which we completed based on their request as part of this 8CM2 process. But other than that, there have been no other findings. We've also built a pretty good rhythm with our analyst and with the department on 8CM2, and we're receiving our funds pretty much in full with a 60 to 75 delayed disbursement. So it's at this point, it is mostly a cash delay by 60 to 75 days, but we do receive that cash within that time frame. With the new teach out request from the department, we are continuing to support and teach our students that are in class. In fact, since April 11th, we have retained 90% of our students since the notification came in regarding no new enrollments, which is truly good and shows that our students are enjoying their experience within our campuses at FCC. We've also made some adjustments on cost on our end. And for FCC, we are matching our revenue with our expenses. We were able to immediately reduce our cost for enrolling new students, and that has also helped towards our overall cost reduction. Overall, FCC is just about 20% of our business, so the overall impact is low on our overall financial standing. Regarding the campuses in Arizona, both Phoenix and Mesa continue to do well. As shared with the commission, the financials for both Phoenix and Mesa are strong, and we continue to perform well at both campuses in 2022 as well as in Q1 2023. Overall, IEC has a very strong balance sheet. Our cash and financial position is also doing well and continues to do well. We have a strong composite score. At the end of 2022, we had a composite score of 2.9 out of 3. And our current ratio is sitting at 2.07 for 2022. And as of end of April, we're sitting at 1.7. So overall, current ratio also is looking quite strong for IEC. That was my quick update on our financial stability and soundness.
Great. I think there's two parts to this agenda item and Mr. Paul, you'd also mentioned the stipulated agreement with this board. So before we transition to that, you said that you had some comments on that. Are there any questions from board members on the current status of IEC and here UEI with the Department of Ed? And also any questions on the impact of the heightened cash management on the institution. And I guess one clarifying question that I would have, Mr. Sardana, is the HCM2 for all of the institutions or solely for the Florida campus? And so what degree does it affect IEC as a whole?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Mittman, for the question. It only impacts Flora Kerr College, so only the one OPID for Flora Kerr College. We have three other OPIDs, and it does not impact the other OPIDs, so it's very isolated to Flora Kerr College.
Okay. And then, you know, question, Mr. Paul, what's the timeline that you would anticipate a response from Department of Education to your appeal?
I don't believe that's been prescribed, and so obviously we'd like them to time to thoroughly review our response and reconsider their decision. And so we respect that their timeline and the time they would need to invest in that. But obviously we would love to hear back as soon as possible.
Okay. All right. Questions from other board members? Hearing none at this time. Mr. Paul, you'd also said that you were a member of the team was going to address concerns around the compliance with the stipulated agreement.
Yes, sir. For that topic, I'm going to hand it over to our regional vice president of operations for the Pacific region, which includes the Arizona campuses, Ms. Krista Jones. So over to you, Krista.
Thank you. I am here to address our noncompliance with the current stipulated agreement. I'll start by saying that we are an accountable organization, and one thing we say internally is no fluff, no excuses, and no stories. So I'm going to live up to that. I am the one who signed this agreement in 2019. At the end of 2020, we had a couple of things going on. We, like others, were living with the new reality of COVID and remote work. Many of us had grabbed our laptops and were working from home, and some of us were reassessing life choices. And the person pertinent to this conversation was our director of compliance, who chose to resign, and unfortunately, who had been complying with the second part of the stipulation, which was providing the board with electronic copies of all the education records of students in Arizona on a quarterly basis. This fell through the cracks as it was on her calendar. That said, as soon as Director LaMontagne brought this to our attention, the student records team worked around the clock to get us current on our commitment, and we are now current. Additionally, we have calendared this on student records, compliance, finance, and my calendar so that we do not make this mistake again. I apologize for this and commit that we will not have this happen ever again. The other item covered in the stipulation agreement was the increase in the surety bond that was completed in November of 2019. In summary, we are grateful to have the opportunity to work with our students at both of our Arizona campuses, and we look forward to many years of continued partnership with the state of Arizona. Now I'd like to briefly introduce my colleague, Darcy Schnuth, the Vice President of Student Finance and Records Management, who leads the student records team. Darcy?
Good morning. I will be the main point of contact for the quarterly submissions of the student records going forward. And I've worked with Ms. Rome over the last 2 weeks, and we have since uploaded the records that were requested for all currently active students, as well as for all prior students since 1-1 of 2019. And I just really want to assure that the quarterly reporting is a priority for myself and my team going forward, and we'll be making sure this is happening timely and fully.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything else that you care to share on the stipulated agreement topic? Hearing none. So, you know, it's beyond the purview of this board to, you know, to make or infer any judgments on the ongoing proceedings with the Department of Education. You know, our responsibility is twofold, well, maybe threefold, to protect the students who attend schools that are licensed here in Arizona, and also to protect the Arizona STRIFE Fund, the Student Recovery Fund. And with that, my recommendation, and I'll make a motion, is to grant approval for the regular vocational license and to amend the stipulated agreement to include increasing the bond to 10% of the gross tuition revenue for both campuses. So your gross tuition revenue for Arizona, which currently is $37,356,357 between the two campuses. And this is probably based on an annual basis as opposed to the 6 months that you shared with us. Additionally, impose a civil penalty of $1,000 for noncompliance with the stipulated agreement and to require quarterly reporting. Can I get a second to that motion?
This is Dr. Reich, I'll second.
Okay.
Dr. Mittman, if I may for a moment, just to be clear to the institution, that your 10% of GTR, then your bond would increase from its current rate to the new bond, $3,735,635 would be your bond increase. So that would be the new bond.
Yeah, and I'm happy to amend the motion. I meant to say that. So we have a motion, we have a second. Mr. LaMountain, can you call the vote?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano, have you joined? Mr. Romano is absent. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your phone, vote of four ayes, one absent, that motion passes.
And Mr. Paul or Fateri, do you agree to the stipulations?
Yes, we agree with the stipulations. We appreciate that.
Okay, good. Well, I hope everything works out with Department of Education to the benefit primarily of your students, but also to the institution, and wish you well. And we'll be following up because I chair the Finance Committee, so I'll see you at the next quarterly meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you.
Okay.
Dr. Mehmet, up next would be, we are going to move LS coding. Again, Mr. Romano has not joined. So I believe next up would be American College of Music.
Yep. So let's see, we've got American College of Music.
Hey, Scott Wallace. So do we have any representatives from the college?
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah.
And who is that, Ben?
Yes.
And you are the CEO, Ben, is that correct?
Yeah, president, CEO, that's correct.
Is there anybody else that's joining you on this call?
No, I'm the only one.
Okay. Are there any comments you want to make before I have some questions?
No, I'm just thank you for entertaining us and doing the application process. I would say that the department was very helpful and did an incredible job in putting the whole package together, and I appreciate that.
Okay, very good. Well, tell me what's happening in Arizona, if you would, please, in terms of your school.
Okay, we are not operating in Arizona now because we don't have an authority to do so. So this is what this meeting is about. Getting the permission to operate. I have an office in Arizona, and we have through the Secretary of State, we're licensed to operate as far as our school goes with the Secretary of State, and so we're just waiting for this to get finalized, and as soon as that is finalized, then we're going to start our operations. And right now we have an office in California, so we are moving our operations to Arizona due to regulatory and income, as far as what we need. I'm trying to lower the cost of our operating expenses, and so that's a factor in moving to Arizona.
Okay. Do you have operations in, are you teaching, are you carrying on programs for students in California?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and so you're moving that operation to Phoenix?
Yes.
Okay. All righty. So how many students do you have going in California at this time? Or students overall? Excuse me.
We have
none
in Arizona. Yeah, we have two students. Our college was founded in 2019, and it took a year and a half to get regulatory, the permission to operate, and the IRS, we're a nonprofit organization. And so that lead us into 2020, and then the COVID hit. We finally got okay to operate in 2021 because of COVID. It took a long time. And so now we had to start recruiting students, and that whole process, there was a drop in enrollment throughout the nation as far as college students during that time. So we finally, through various you know, outreach at music. This is a music. Okay, let me go back. The college was founded as a master's program in music education. Our main goal is to improve and provide professional development for music educators. And through the process of gaining a master's of music in education. So that's our market, and we go to all these various music conferences, and we participate in currently participating in the Arizona Music Educators Association, along with the Arizona Band and Orchestra Association.
Okay. And your tuition program with fees and so forth is what, about $14,000? Did I read
that? Yes, that's about right. It's one of the goals of the Board of Trustees to keep the tuition low, affordable, because we really believe that students, and especially now when the student loan, Department of Education student loan is almost 8%. So we try to keep, like I said, we're a nonprofit, so we try to keep the tuition very affordable. That's one aspect of the school. The other aspect is that we're 100% online. And the other aspect is that we provide granting and music a master's degree in 14 months. So that's tries to help music educators. We don't stretch it out. And so those are our three main goals through the process of our school.
Okay. And then in your business plan, it states that you need about 3 students to break even. Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, that's about right. We're now running on donations and grants from various granting and entities. So that's our goal. You're exactly right.
Okay, so your business plan says that you've got to raise that. You got to have tuition income as well as contribution income.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, all righty, and. So, and you got some space already set up in Phoenix, already identified. Mm-hmm. You got it under lease right now?
That's right. That's correct.
Okay. And in your business plan, you refer to NASM, and that seems to be important.
Yeah, American Association of Schools of Music is the only accredited agency that does purely music. You know, schools. So right now, we have 2 students. The requirements is that we have to graduate at least 2 students to start the accreditation process. So as soon as those students graduate, which will be a year from now, because they just started in the spring quarter in April. So a year now, 14 months later, we're set to send our application in and start the accreditation process.
Okay, and elsewhere in the business plan, it refers to NASAM. Is that the same as NASM?
Did I mess up on it?
Perhaps, but yeah, I'm just clarifying that there's only one entity
America. It's the National Association of Schools of Music, NASM.
Okay. All right. In your promotional material, and I wish I had the exact document, but it's early on in the documents we received. There's a statement made that people who graduate from your program can expect about $12,000 a year increase in compensation. And it's footnoted to some information on the DOL, which I did not drill down to check it out, but that's a statement that you know, somebody else, one of my board members would probably articulate this better, but you got to be able to defend that.
Well, that's a national average. So it depends on the state. It depends on the school district. Each school district, you know, music educators and teachers are paid basically on a grid. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but the grid on the top goes across in education and it goes down in years. So as teachers get more teaching experience, they get, you know, they go down on the grid years, then across is education. So the average, this is according to the Department of Education, U.S. Department of Education, the average is around $12,000, and it could be less, could be more, but it's about $1,000 a month minus taxes, etc. So yes, that's part of the process of getting a degree that, you know, school districts want their educators to be, you know, as much education as possible. And so that's how it works.
Okay. That is all the questions I have. Do my fellow board members have any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. And Mr. Ugovic, I'm also looking at the cooking from home, as you could know. Hey, knock it off. In your business plan, in the market segment strategy, there are 1,100 master degrees granted. Hold on a second.
Yeah. Paul, you're breaking up horribly.
Okay. Sorry, I have a delivery here and the dogs are going nuts. I'm just looking in the competitive segment where you have the market segment strategy. You note that there are about 1,200 masters in degrees granted in this field. How many schools are in the segment, and how many of them are on ground? How many of them are online? And so, you know, what is it? You know, who is it that you're competing with? And I guess the follow up to that is, you know, two or three students a year is very high touch. But I'm just wondering, you know, once you get accredited, where do you intend to go from there?
Okay, that's a good question. Our long-term goals are to obviously get accredited. And, you know, this is an institution that's 100% online. So we are, you know, our market's going to be throughout the United States. And as far as the market goes, I don't know if I added that in the packet or not, but if you go on our website, we have, there's a comparison chart of all about the top 10 or 11 online music educators that provide a degree similar or exactly like on American College of Music. So this comparison chart, this is what if you go online and you type in Masters of Music and Education online, something like that, you'll get these a lot of these schools. So we did our own research and found that you know, our competition is it goes from about 20,000 for the degree to about 35,000 for an online degree with some stipulations. So that's our market. And from what we hear from music educators in Arizona, California, and in the national level, we went to the National Association of Music Educators in Washington, D.C. in October. Last October, that this is a program that a lot of music educators desire or want, because they don't have time to go to school, brick and mortar school. Music educators, I was a music educator in K-12 for 35 years. I got 2 master's degree and a PhD in music education. And what I went through to get that degree, those degrees, was a lot of sacrifice and time, and I went to different institutions. And that's why I came up with this program, because I know music educators have no time to do anything except teach their students, do rehearsals, and go to competitions, do festivals, and in the meantime, teach and do all the paperwork that they have to do on a daily basis. So that's where I came up with this program, because it alleviates a lot of time going back and forth to school. And the program is designed to provide, to have 2 classes per quarter. It's a quarter system. And that's reasonable. That can happen because they just have 2 classes. And there's 1 summer quarter that they take 3. So that's 45 quarter units, and they can graduate. We provide a third party if they want to stretch out the tuition throughout the program. They can do that, and with 3% interest. This is a third party entity that will do that. We also offer some scholarships, and some students to just pay as they go. They have enough money to pit down like $2,500 per quarter. So that's an option that they have.
Great. All right. Well, thank you, Dr. Umovich.
Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. Wallace.
Anything else from my board members, fellow board members? If not, I'd like to make a motion to grant the American College of Music a conditional non-accredited degree program subject to a $15,000 surety bond.
We have a motion. Is there a second?
I'll second. This is Paul Mittman.
We have a motion and a second. Roll call. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano, I see that you joined, but I don't know that you participated in much of this. We'll move on. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. And Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of 4 ayes and 1 absence, the motion passes.
Mr. LaMountain, did the institution agree to the $15,000 surety bond?
Dr. Rubovich, would you agree to that?
I had in the packet a surety bond, but I'm not sure what it was.
It's 15,000. Yeah.
Okay. I'm good with that then. It's included in the packet, I believe.
Great. Yep.
Okay.
I want to thank you for taking the time to do this. And we are very excited to move to Arizona. I personally we're entertaining on a personal level move there ourselves. And I'm very excited. I'm very excited to be a part of the state and the community. And we're outreaching to all the music educators in that state.
Great. We're glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Before we move on, Dr. Leck, are you ready or do you want a little more time? Dr. Leck.
I'm here. I have too many tabs open. I can't find you.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Great.
Okay. So with that, why don't we move on to Aviation Institute of Maintenance, and then we'll jump back to LS Coding afterwards. Dr. Leck?
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. I'm assuming, Vicki, would you like to make an opening statement on behalf of the Aviation Institute of Maintenance?
Hi, thank you. I'm going to allow our Executive Vice President to introduce the school and the application.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. I'm Joel English. I'm Executive Vice President of Aviation Institute of Maintenance. I'll just really briefly introduce, first of all, the staff that we have called today, introduce the institution at large, and then very briefly let you know why we're excited about coming to the Phoenix area for our campus. So on the call, Vicki Clements is our Director of Compliance, who you've worked with alongside. Also, Derek Stewart, who is online at our Virginia campus, who is a manager of compliance, and they've worked with your staff. Let me just commend you and your staff for being extremely helpful. We have schools in 11 different states, and I can't think of a state body that has been more supportive of our efforts. So thank you so much for what you've done. Also on the call here in the room with me is Russell Gibson, our Vice President of Finance, and Greg Daniel, our Regional Director, who oversees five of our Aviation Institute of Maintenance campuses. And finally on the call at our Chicago campus today is Mark Holloway. Mark is our Director of Aviation Education and oversees all education across our campuses. So Aviation Institute of Maintenance is a group of career schools that teach an FAA-certified aviation maintenance technician program. We have 14 campuses across the country. The Phoenix location would be our 15th campus. We actually serve a large number of the aircraft maintenance students across the country. There are about 187 schools that have the FAA certified A&P program, as it's called, Airframe and Power Plant Technician Program. And we're 15 of those 187 schools, so just about 8 or 9% of the schools. And yet our campuses are a little larger because all we do is aircraft maintenance. Our average school size is about 300 students, and we have roughly 4,000 students across the country in all of the schools. Our students graduate and receive the FAA certification, allowing them to go to work for aircraft companies such as all the major airlines and MROs. Our largest employer last year of our graduates was Boeing Aircraft, and so our students are not only repairing aircraft for airlines, but also building them for the manufacturers. Last year in 2022, about 26% of all students who became certified came from the AIM campuses. So even though we're only 8% of the schools out there, our graduates represent 26% of all certified mechanics that comes from schools each year. So really focus on aviation maintenance in a great way. Now, we're coming into Phoenix, the campus location that we have secured, and our lease is active. The construction is active on that location. It's about 5 minutes south of the airport on 32nd Street. We watch the airplanes take off from there, so it's very close to the airport and will allow us a great access to contribute to the great aerospace industry in Phoenix. One of our big employers at several of our locations is Honeywell, and so that providing access to certified aircraft technicians to Honeywell and all of the airlines that commit Sky Harbor is our passion. And one final thing I'll say is that we work with communities that we serve for youth outreach. We're working with South Mountain High School, which is about 2 miles from our campus, right up next to South Mountain. They have a small aviation program with within their career and technical education offerings. We'll be bringing a dual enrollment program to them where we will be able to teach their students while they're in 11th to 12th grade, and the credits that they earn for high school will transfer to us later. So any student who takes a great interest and has a passion for aviation maintenance will actually be able to transfer some of the credits they earn in high school to our campus at AIM if they decide to do that. We're working with South Mountain on a youth program. All the incoming freshmen for August will have the opportunity to come in and learn about aircraft and learn about aircraft maintenance. And so we really get a lot out of interacting with the community, providing resources, and partnering with community in our offering. So thanks for letting me introduce our organization. Be thrilled to talk more and answer some questions. And thanks a lot.
Well, thank you very much. I actually assume that this is a much needed student body, having flown a lot. So thank you very much for doing that. I have some interest questions. So assuming the FAA gives you all of the curriculum that you have to teach, are they the ones that certify them? Do they have to take a test or something? How does that work?
Yeah, great question. I'm going to ask Mark Holloway to kind of talk about the certification process. Yes, it is the third party certification that comes from the FAA. Mark, tell us about that certification process as they complete the program.
Definitely will. Thanks so much. So our curriculum is going to align very, very closely with what the FAA provides as a certification, you know, an ACS, right? An Airman Certification Standard. That being said, the students to be certified as ANPs will need to take 3 written exams, which would be a general, an airframe, and a power plant. They could do that at our facilities. And then there are, I don't know, roughly 250, I'm thinking, people that are designated as mechanic examiners by the FAA. They will give, and I'm one of them for our organization, and we will provide the oral and practical examination for the general, for the airframe and the power plant. So it would take successful completion of all that testing for them to become an A&P certificated mechanic. Hopefully that answered the question.
That's very helpful. So is that only at the federal level, or do they have to register like with a state? So education, nursing, all of those, you register with an entity in each state. So is this only at the federal level?
So the certification is definitely from the FAA as a certification. So federal level.
Okay. Got it. Okay. That's very interesting. So I'm very curious. I'm not a financial expert, but I'm assuming if you're trying to fix planes, some of those big planes come with it have to be a lot of money. So how do they learn how to fix, you know, the big Boeing planes? How does that work?
So you're absolutely right. If you're thinking this school you're talking about must have a bunch of airplanes, right?
I would think.
And the answer is absolutely right. Though the FAA has minimum standards, we kind of go well past that. We have about a dozen aircraft bringing into our facility, at least one full functioning jet, like a Learjet, several aircraft that are of a rotary, both helicopters and fixed wing aircraft. Usually we have about 12 aircraft that we bring into our campuses. And so we look for a campus location that has an extremely large open space that we convert into a hangar. And that is exactly the process we're going at right now on 32nd Street, bringing we've rented a space that was originally a call center. So extremely large. It's an 85,000 square foot building, and about 65,000 of that is open hangar floor space. The aircraft that we've identified for this, we actually worked along with Boeing to acquire. So we'll be bringing that into town, and it'll be all the aircraft. Now, it's not a 747. They're smaller jets and equipment, but all of the same functions from everything from structures, landing gear, wings, engines, and even avionics that work on a larger aircraft are the same components, same materials in a smaller jet, a smaller aircraft. So they learn it all on a little bit smaller equipment, and it directly transfers to the larger bodies.
Oh, that's interesting. So I'm just being a nerd right now. Do you break the aircraft so they have to like figure out how to fix it as part of this? I'm just really hoping we have some really sharp, critically thinking people here to fix the airplanes so that when we get on them, we are safe.
I assure you, you're not as big a nerd as we are. And so,
you haven't met me.
Kevin. Mark, tell us a little bit about the equipment and how we develop the transferable skills.
Yeah, that's great stuff. So we're going to have quite a few mock-ups that would be smaller. You can kind of see internal how things work, and that kind of helps our students as we move out to the larger airplanes and see how the systems all interact with each other. But most, if not all, of our equipment, our instructors, probably a little more nerdy than you, and they're going to come in and they're going to alter those airplanes. So they're not going to be something we'd want to go fly, but we'll be able to flip some switches and cause things to happen that the student would have to troubleshoot. We're going to have airplanes that we're never going to put an airplane in front of our student and say, oh, you're a student, you need to fix that. But we definitely will know in advance that there are problems that need to be fixed, and we have parts ordered and we're ready to go. And yeah, that's the big part of it. We have very active advisory boards, to be honest, and the airlines are saying to us very clearly, we need people that can troubleshoot and think critically, just like you said. And so digging through very kind of in-depth aircraft data and using our mock-ups and the airplanes we bring in the building, they can clearly troubleshoot and learn to repair as the entire process, and then follow that through with the process of returning that equipment to service so that again, we won't be flying, but their experience will be as if here's this problem, figure out what's wrong, figure out the best route to fix, and then return that to service.
That's interesting. So are your advisory board members like connected to you career-wise? Because I'm assuming based on you guys being more of the VOC school that you're trying to get your students placed with airlines and manufacturers, right? Do you have like career services where it does placement?
Right. If Mark, I'm going to answer that question because while I do it, I'm going to really take a risk here. I know you're at the Chicago campus. You know what I'm about to ask.
Right on.
Could you take your computer and go into the hangar so they can take a look and see what we're bringing to town?
So it's going to be kind of Blair Witchy, but I'm on my way.
All right. And meanwhile.
And only those that are really old know what that means.
So to answer your question, yep. So all of our campuses have an individual PAC meeting, program advisory committee meeting twice a year that bring usually half of them are airline folks and the other half would be an organization called a maintenance repair overhaul station, the kind of that does major overhauls of aircraft, and also Boeing, Lockheed Martin, the types of folks who build new aircraft. And in those meetings, they guide us on exactly how they want our students to be trained, what skills they want to have, what equipment we should have in our schools. And yes, we have a full career services team, and the career services team lock those students or align them with a job as they near graduation. At our Chicago location, we have our first graduation. It's a newer campus for us. And many of those students have jobs as they walk around. So I told you we had about a dozen aircraft at our locations, and Mark's out in the hangar now. Just give us a quick scan. But what you'll see is a large Learjet in one corner, large helicopter in another. Mark, maybe just tell us the kind of aircraft we have and how that relates to what we'll bring to Phoenix.
Let me hit to mute here. So yeah, so just as an example, there's two Cessna 310s here. Turn this around a little bit so you can kind of see here. The 310 behind me here, we pick them very specifically. This is a high performance 310. If you notice, it's got three propellers on each engine. This one's turbocharged. You'll find that structurally it's a little more stout, but that's a great example. When you come across that hangar here, and again, I don't mean to make you sick there, but the noise is kind of high because we got a set of students jacking this airplane and swinging the gear through. But this 310 jacks, it's a little less high
little less performance, right? So more, but again, into the other one, it worked really well. And if you look, they're on Jackson now. They're in a landing gear class. I don't know if you can see it, but they've got wheels removed. They'll get everything put back together, and they'll do a complete retraction test on it when it's done. And again, that gets us back to what I was saying before as a return to service kind of quality. So if I
that time, would be what smaller, would say would be an airplane size. It's kind of an odd thing. The FAA does not make a distinction between
that would be aircraft qualified to work on, say, Cessna 150, very small, you know, privately owned airplane, as opposed to a large airplane. So behind me, you'll kind of see a Learjet, and a Lear 45, I think. And so twin turbine engines, larger airplane. It isn't as large as a 37, but the systems are all the same. That pressurized 310 we were looking at earlier would be an example of an airplane that would have, say, a different condition of system than this larger airplane. But this one, large one behind me, would be the same as air cycle machine type of thing you'd find on the modern brand new 37 Max, right, that they're making coming off the assembly line today.
That's great, Mark. And while you're right there, show us, if you don't mind, show us the American airline engine. Since he's right about there, I'll let you know that it's very common for our partners to contribute to our the equipment that we train students on. So about 3 months ago, American Airlines came in, showed us the banner, said, hey, put this humongous banner in because we're going to donate to you this JT8 aircraft engine that came off of a 737. And so the students will have their hands-on equipment that is exactly the kind of equipment they'll work on when they graduate and go to work.
This is most interesting. I don't think we've ever seen. I have never seen a mechanic program here. So I've seen flight people, like people teaching people to fly planes, but this is definitely interesting. All right. So I don't mean to like completely digress, but that was really interesting. So thank you for that. I have a couple questions. Number one is, in the application, you have one program, but your executive summary says you offer lots, like, different programs. So is this the only program that you're planning on bringing to Phoenix?
We always start with the aviation maintenance technician program. That is our bread and butter. But then what we do as we develop the campus further after we're enrolling is see what other types of industries are in need of skilled labor, and we'll often add another program. So as an example, at our Atlanta campus, we've added a welding program, and so we do certified welding as well. At our Orlando campus, no surprise, an HVAC program. Very much see an HVAC.
We don't need that here in Arizona at all.
Okay.
I think we're hotter than them. Just saying.
That's right. So whether it's that type of program or an electrician program whatever else would adjust, we have actually I think you have a drawing of the flooring, the floor layout of the program on the right hand side of the campus. Behind the classrooms, we're saving additional technical space for the possibility of a new program after we get aviation maintenance up and running.
Okay, but they're all VOC related. Okay. I did notice that you didn't have any marketing materials because, excuse me, you smartly said that you didn't have any marketing materials because you're not marketing to Arizona folks before you get approval. So that's very smart of you. However, and this might be more of a question for Kevin, are we supposed to be looking at marketing materials before they market? Like, how does that work? I don't know.
So we did conduct a review of the current websites that they have out there at the different locations throughout the country. We saw nothing that would not be compliant with us. So all we would ask is, in the future, when you get ready to launch and you've got digital ads or however else you want to do that, is just send a copy to us so that we can review that materials. But what we've seen so far is all compliant.
Thank you, Kevin. Appreciate that. So you guys agree to that before you advertise, send it over to staff. They're amazing. They'll get it back to you.
100%. All advertising we do comes through our compliance department. We'll do that plenty of time ahead. And make sure you have the approvals or offer us the approvals before we launch any advertising.
Thank you. The only other thing I have before I open it up to my fellow board members, I noticed a discrepancy on the enrollment agreement and what I assume to be in the program system. I'm sure Kevin might be able to help with my words. But the enrollment agreement showed that your total cost for the program was $53,022. And in that programs form, it says it's $51,972. Kevin, I don't know if that's, I think that's your system. So I don't know if they're inputting it. It's coming out two different ways, but I just wanted to point that out.
All right. Yeah, and we'll go back in and we can look at that specifically. And it might be in the system because of the way it adds and fees and such. So yeah. I guess we could just ask the question, what is the total tuition?
You bet. Derek, if you're on the line, you probably have the ability to look at the enrollment agreement. I believe it's the 51,000 number, but I know Derek probably has it in front of him.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now.
Okay, great. And then question. you guys, so your students get financial aid, right? In order to pay for this? Yeah.
That's right.
And then just curious, what's the typical salary for someone who's exiting school with this and getting hired by somebody?
It's pretty amazing. You pointed out the great need for this program. Boeing estimated last year that we'll need 690,000 aircraft maintenance technicians worldwide over the next 20 years. In America alone, it's 190,000 over the next 20 years. That's 19,000 per year, about 10,000 per year because that's over 20 years. And right now the FAA is certifying only about 7,000 per year. So we could almost double our efforts. It's a great need. And what that does is makes it a very high paid job. So our students, if they're going into an airline, they commonly start at $55,000 to $60,000. If they're going to a manufacturer like Lockheed Martin or Boeing, it's usually about $1,000 that they earn. It's a very high paid job for the short 2-year program and right at $50,000 of cost.
And all you have to do is have a high school diploma?
That is correct. We require a high school diploma or a GED, and we give the students, start them with the very basic technical skills can basically turn a novice into a certified aircraft.
Okay, well, that is the extent of my questions after we figure out the cost of it.
Sure. The total cost on the enrollment agreement is the $53,022. What was the other number you gave? 51? Was it 51,122?
It was 51,972. And it's in a document. Give me one second. It's called Kevin. I think Kevin's going to have to know this. It's programs.png. And it looks to me what is listed for,
That is in our system, in our Salesforce system. So yeah. What we'll do now that we've confirmed exactly, we'll make sure that the two numbers add up.
Okay. Depending on what the difference is, we might be able to figure out what it's, maybe it's not adding one number in or something like that.
It's also possible. We did have a tuition increase, a small tuition, 3% tuition increase in January of this year. It's possible we could have provided old information on the first. I'm not sure.
Okay. All right. Well, do any of my fellow board members have any questions?
I'm on mute. Go ahead.
Interesting topic.
Hold on.
Keith, you're on. Keith, we can hear you.
Sorry.
I'm good, Dr. Leck. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Mittman. Okay, well,
Dr. Leck, I apologize. Coming in late, I was unable to recuse myself from this particular school, so I won't be able to participate in that. Just for clarity, just based on both myself and Ms. Clemens serve on the ACCSC board together.
And really quickly, based on the number you gave me, it looks like that difference is the amount that we list is estimated for the books. Possible that maybe the books wasn't entered as a fee. I'm not sure, but it looks like that difference is the book total, estimated book total.
We'll review that and make sure that we connect with you to know exactly where we stand.
All right. Well, with Mike recusing himself, Kevin, we're fine. We're for quorum, right?
We are. We're good.
Okay. All right. Then I guess I'd like to make a motion that we approve the regular accredited vocational and degree granting license and have the institution maintain their $15,000 bond.
I will second. This is Paul Mittman.
All right. We have a motion. We have a second. Roll call will be Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano? You just have to tell us that you're abstaining.
Abstaining or recused?
Recused. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. By your vote of five or four ayes and one abstention, the motion passes.
I want to thank you very much for your time. And as we develop the campus, if there's ever an opportunity, you would have to come out and see the facility that we're building. We'd love to do that. And if you could ever use space for a meeting or such, we'd be happy to open up. We usually open our campuses to community involvement. And so we'd love to show you around sometime when we're active.
Great. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Romano, are you settled in and ready to roll with LS coding?
As settled as I'm going to be. So, yes, we're good.
Okay. Take it away.
All right. Okay. So we'll welcome LS Coding Academy. This is a continuation from our last board meeting as well. So I believe we have Ms. Jones and Ms. Krebs joining us today. Would either of you like to make an opening statement? If you are, you're on mute. I believe, Ms. Jones, you're on mute.
Okay, this is Patricia Krebs. We thank you again for inviting us to your board meeting for May. And I will hand it over to Sharon, and we will be happy to answer any questions for you. Sharon?
Okay, I just want to make sure. Hold on.
Sharon, you'll either need to hang up your phone or your computer. Ms. Jones?
Yes.
Okay. We can hear you now.
You can hear.
Good.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Sorry about that. Thank you for having us back to review our renewal application. I did go through and ensure that all of the requested information had been submitted. So I believe everything that was required was submitted in time as compared to the last meeting that we had. And I believe everything was reviewed. I double-checked our email, or I double-checked my email to make sure that there was no outstanding requests, and I didn't see any. So I believe we should be on board with everything that was required. So hopefully we can move forward with this.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us today. I know the last time we were together, there was a lot of concern about timeliness, responses to our board staff, providing materials. We were missing a lot of materials. We know we had already passed your actual licensure approval date. I'd just like to take a moment, Mr. Lamont or Mr. Blanchard, can you comment? Have we seen an improvement in the response from the school and the materials provided, or do we still have some concerns?
Mr. Romano, members of the board, we've seen some improvement. I would like to just briefly check, make sure. I know Ms. Vetter, can you give us an update? Did the responsiveness that you saw, were you comfortable with what you've seen?
So I had requested some updates to the catalog and enrollment agreement. I think I had requested those on about a week deadline. Mrs. Jones did get back to me a little bit past that deadline, stating that she had not seen my email, and then she provided those updates, I think within a day or two of that. So a little bit past the deadline, but she did get those back to me with most of the requested changes.
Great. Thank you. And Mr. Blanchard, do you have any input?
No, I'm good. Noel and I discussed this a few times, so I'm good on my end. Thank you.
Okay.
Great. Can I make a comment, Mr. Lamont and Mr. Yes. Romano? Just in the packet that we received, the only financial statements that I see are the statement of cash flows. So we don't have an income statement, so we don't know. I mean, all we know is by inference. So there's no income statement, there's no balance sheet. So, I mean, that's kind of along the same lines, not what we would expect. We can kind of infer from what you gave us, but it's not. And I imagine that you have it because it looks like it's maybe out of a QuickBooks. And so if there's cash flows, it should be able to generate your income statement and your balance sheet. And Mr. Wallace, or I'm not sure if you found it somewhere else, and maybe I'm just missing it.
It was in new documents.
I'm sorry, say it again.
You will see in new documents. They offer a balance sheet, a P&L as well. Oh.
New documents. All right. Thank you.
Yeah.
And Dr. Mittman and members of the board, you know, again, the challenge with this application has been documents have been coming in all over the place at all different times. And so, one, I would apologize on our behalf that, you know, I didn't put a different folder in there with all the new information that was provided. And there may be a link or two that didn't connect to that. So if that would be my apologies, but it does go back to the frustration that we've had since the beginning with this particular institution and this particular license application, that this is not what we typically see. So we are in a better place today than we were a month ago when we met.
And Ms. Jones and Ms. Krebs, I think that's really what I'm trying to get to here is that, you know, part of our role and responsibility is to ensure that the school has the appropriate management oversight and administrative capacity to operate the school effectively. As you do have, you know, 200 some students that are really relying on you, right? And to make sure that it's operational. I do also know for a period of time, at least it was shared at our last board meeting, that I believe, Ms. Jones, you were out for a period of time where you were unable to support the school operations. I'm certainly not asking to go into what those reasons were and why. I just wanted to try and get clarity that I was accurate in my statement of saying there was a period of time that you were out and unable to manage the school activities. And if you could share how long that time was.
Yeah,
if I have that correct.
You do have that correct. I'm sorry to interrupt. You do have that correct. It was a period between, I would say, between 6 and 12 months off and on. I wasn't unable to support fully. I was, it was just my communication and my ability to support was pretty limited based on what I was going through. Yes. But, so that's where I would rely on my backup, being Trish and, the previous owner, Lynn Scholler, who is my backup instructor, to also support the school in the time that I couldn't. But I have, definitely jumped back in and am past that point. So
and I apologize, I should probably know this. Miss Krebs, are you the sole owner of the school, or is this a shared ownership with Miss Jones as well?
No, this is a shared ownership.
Okay.
I'm and Karen works more remotely, and I physically am at the school at least a few hours a day with staff. So that's how we've arranged it right from the beginning when we took ownership in July of 2019. So anyway, and then, like I say, during COVID, I still was in the school answering questions and so forth because I was able to come here. But, you know, and Karen worked more on a remote basis. So, but we communicate and emails and you know, and we're we're all on board together. It's just that we're not in the same physical place, but I am physically at Ellis Coding Education.
Okay.
At our school in Tucson.
Thank you for that. You know, sometimes our concern is when the amount of staff is so small, right? When somebody does have to effectively take a leave or is out of pocket for whatever reason for some period of time, that can dramatically impact the school's ability to operate and address student needs and meet the expectations of the students as a whole. Recognizing all schools have gone through a very difficult period during the pandemic. There's no doubt about that piece of it. But I think it's required all of us to take a look and to say, what is our sustainment if we lose critical players within our group? And how do we ensure that we continue to operate at the level and that expectation of the licensure and of the student body? Can either of you speak to the fact of what you have put into place at this time to avoid some of the gaps that you experienced over the past year during Ms. Jones's intermittent participation or ability to support?
Yeah, so this is Patricia Krebs. Okay, so I physically have been here. I do have another job, but I am here every day. And we did have two staff members, but we're down to one staff member, which is okay. And she works remotely sometime, but we have our phones that we answer here. And if we don't answer here, then we haven't forwarded. You know, we have emails. We have a lot of questions, you know, with emails, and we respond to it. So the huge thing, even during COVID, we kept communication open and would answer the phone and get back to students. Because the worst thing about having an online program, you want to make sure that you can talk to someone if you have any questions. So I myself have been here through COVID and continue to be here. And if I have questions, you know, I talk to Sharon and like our other staff, we communicate. And we have weekly meetings and so forth, and just try to all stay on the same page and make sure that our students know that obviously that we have open communication.
This is Sharon, if I can jump in. So we've kind of restructured the duties that were delegated to myself and Ms. Krebs. And one of our main staff members, she's really been on board learning a lot of the additional stuff so that she can support me. She's been assisting with being my backup, if you will, for the students for grading purposes or responding to them and making sure that their needs are met, you know, on a timely basis. And we're looking at a lot of our students, they like to be there. They like to be at the school. So we've had a lot of interest in students volunteering while they're still learning. That helps them gain some experience, you know, working in the office and whatnot. So when we have a student that's interested in volunteering, we're more than willing to bring them in and use them, if you will, and allow them, you know, to gain additional education on the background of the business. But of course, it helps us benefit. So we kind of have a backup plan there. And then we're working on increasing our revenue to afford us the opportunity to hire an additional staff, either full-time or part-time, depending on our needs.
Thank you for that. I appreciate the explanation. And certainly, Ms. Krebs, I understand during that time of the pandemic, it sounds like you were trying to be as responsive as possible. I think the concern was, and not to infer that we received any student complaints or anything of that nature, but merely just taking, the experience of the non-timeliness of getting documents into the board staff and what that looks like certainly draws question in your ability to make sure that you're staying compliant with the expectations. But Ms. Jones, at least from what you've described, it sounds like you have recognized some of the gaps and started to create some backfill training and what might be put you in a better place if something were to occur, if you had to leave for any extended period of time or what that looks like. So I appreciate you taking a few moments to just walk me through that. You know, again, our concern is always with the students and making sure they're getting what they need and the support from the school versus very lengthy, timely delays. So I just have a few other elements that I would like to quickly jump into. Some of them are more clerical than anything else. I'll refer to the refund policy that you have on your enrollment agreement on page 2. It does not call out weekends or holidays as part of the cancellation piece. Now, the good news is on page 8 of your catalog, you do have that called out. So I would just ask that you do make that correction on your enrollment agreement so it is reflected appropriately, or at least you refer to your catalog from that standpoint. But you can't not have it. So if you could please make that particular correction, that would be great. Let's see. I believe we actually covered this when we went through the change of ownership for the school. So I apologize if I'm retreading on some of this ground really quickly. I'll pause. Mr. Blanchard, do you have a comment you'd like to make?
Yes, thank you. Yeah, that actually would be required. The 72-hour cancellation notice has to be in the enrollment agreement. You're okay. Correct.
They can't just refer to their catalog. It has to be stated on there as well.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
And thank you for the correction as well. So we want to make sure you're really close. You have it in the catalog. We just want to get it on the enrollment agreement too, right?
Yeah, okay. That's no problem.
Okay. And then again, we may have treaded this ground previously around expectations for graduation. That's on page 12 of your catalog. And I'm trying to reconcile that with your allowing a student 30 days with no attendance. When the graduation, the expectations for graduation on page 12 really talk about weekly completion of materials and calls out exactly how much materials they are to complete on a weekly basis to qualify for graduation. But yet it seems to be contradicted with the attendance policy of a student can go up to 30 days with no activity whatsoever. So I just, could you maybe explain that for me so I can better appreciate how a student can miss 30 days but still meet your expectations of graduation?
Yeah, so actually that might need to revise, and I know and I believe that that's something that was actually just changed on the updated and catalog at the request of the updated documents for this meeting. So essentially the plan that we have in place currently is to monitor the students. And so unfortunately, we do have students that will go for a time period without having any progress in the course whatsoever. And up until or previously, you know, it wasn't monitored as well as it should have been. However, we've implemented a plan where we are looking at our students on a 30-day basis. So what happens at that point is if the student has not had any activity, because you're correct, they're required to complete the 4 sessions per week in order to be on time for completing the program, you know, at the expected completion date. So we've implemented a plan in place where we have a 30-day period where we're going to check, where we're checking on our students to make sure that they actually do have that activity. And then at that point, they're given a warning, and then they have an additional 30 days to comply with, you know, getting back into the program. And they are able, because it is online, they're able to, if you will, catch themselves up if they need to. And then, of course, if we still see no activity within that next 30 days, then they're suspended. And then that would comply or go into what we have in our catalog, where they would have to come up with a plan to ensure that they are going to comply with our requirements for completion of the program. So it's kind of a monitoring system, but I can take a look at that again, the way it's worded in the catalog, and make sure that it's a lot clearer than it seems to be right now.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. It is hard to connect the dots, just given you're so specific on weekly expectations, but then technically a student can miss four weeks of that. And it's really just unclear to me, so I could only imagine it may be unclear to the student as well. So please, if you would, take a look at that.
Absolutely.
Finally, on page, sorry, was there a comment? Yes, Ms. Krebs?
Yeah, I just want to add that some of our students are funded by the Career One Stop WIOA, and so between their case managers and us, we do monitor them quite well and to make sure that they stay on track. So we have that extra, not all students obviously are funded, but we have a lot of students that are, and they have their own guidelines as well. So our goal is for them to stay current, and we do have help from the case managers, and they reach out to us too if there's a concern. And so we work with them.
Yeah, it may just be helpful to add a comment by those graduation expectations that, you know, can vary based on, you know, attendance or whatever that looks like, however you want to word it. I'm just merely sharing. It's confusing from the perspective of you have to be there every week completing certain steps to qualify for graduation, but you can miss up to 30 days without accessing the system. The two seem in conflict with one another.
Okay.
Okay.
No, thank you.
All right. And then this last piece really relates back to, you know, again, what happens if Ms. Jones ends up going out. So on page 13, in regards to kind of a complaint policy, the expectation is that it's brought forward to Ms. Jones. And if they can't reach Ms. Jones over the phone, they need to submit it in writing. But the expectation is that Ms. Jones will reply back to that matter within 14 days. And so what we have normally experienced here is where it will state maybe an individual, but then also say or delegate. That way, if for whatever reason Ms. Jones is out, the student doesn't run into the risk, or really the school doesn't run into the risk of not being able to live within their policies and procedures. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. This is Sharon. Yes, and I can make that change as well.
Okay. All right. Part of our responsibility is not just to the students, but to help you be successful as well. And I'll close out my piece with, again, just saying, you know, the key to that is being as responsive as possible to the board staff when they ask for information. And if you're not understanding that clearly, to reach out and make sure you're connecting with them to get clarity and then get those materials in so that we don't pass over the time of the licensure renewal process, although we have some safety net pieces in place there. So I just want to reiterate that point. I'll now turn over to my fellow board members to see if you have any additional questions for clarity.
I'll ask a question. Thanks for the updated financials. There on your balance sheet, it still shows the PPP disbursement as a loan. Has that been forgiven? December 31st, 2022.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. We have two PPP loans, and both of those have been forgiven. So I will make sure that's updated because I know our bookkeeper, I have the documentation to show that both of those were forgiven for the PPP loans. So yes, that's definitely incorrect.
Well, I mean, if it was forgiven after January 1st, then it would still be correct.
Yeah, so. Actually, I believe the second one was forgiven after January 1st.
Okay. All right. Yep. Well, good.
Yeah.
Good for you guys. That's the only question that I have.
Any other questions? All right. Hearing none, I would like to take just a moment with the board. One of the things that we have as a potential consideration with the motion that I would bring forward is a potential civil penalty for violation under 32-3051. And I didn't I wanted to at least create the space if any board member felt we wanted to discuss potentially taking action based on that. Yeah. Okay. Hearing none, I will go ahead and make a motion then that we approve the non-accredited vocational license renewal for LS Coding Academy, that they maintain their surety bond.
Mr. Romano, can you amend that too to include updating the documentation that you required or requested of them, and then have that documentation returned to us by June 9th, which is a couple of weeks from tomorrow?
Yeah, so I will amend. The absolute correction I'll ask for is on the enrollment agreement. So if you could please make that correction. If you do end up making the other adjustments to the graduation and attendance piece, and then also the delegate piece, please provide those three pieces by June 9th to the board staff.
Okay, perfect. This is Sharon Jones, and I'll take full responsibility for that. I will make sure that I will do all of the changes that we talked about, the enrollment agreement and the catalog. It would just be better for everybody in general. And I will absolutely have that before June 9th.
Great. And do you also accept the maintaining of the surety bond for $15,000?
Absolutely, I do.
Okay. That is my motion to the board. Do I have a second?
Scott Wallace will second.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Wallace.
We have a motion and we have a second. Roll call. Dr. Mittman?
But I, and can I just make a comment for our folks at LS Coding Academy? Your financial statements don't match up. And so I just want to say you didn't get fined, but please, in your future submissions, work very diligently with your staff to make sure that everything is prepared and presented the way it needs to be. So I voted aye.
Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Romano?
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Vote of five ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Jones and Ms. Krebs. Please, please, please follow through. And we hope to see you in a year's time and not
thank
sooner.
Thank you very much. Yeah, not sooner. Thank you very much. I appreciate
all right.
that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Ma'alot, Institutes of the Torah. Ms. Dubitsky, would you like to share an opening comment?
Sure. So just for the record, there's no the there. It's just Ma'alot Institutes of Torah. But so Ma'alot started, the original Ma'alot, I should say, started about 40 years ago, where a few rabbis and educators in Israel were providing educational materials and classes to Americans that were studying in Israel. And then those students would come back to America, either finish or continue on and pursue their careers here. So eventually after that started and they knew that they needed those classes to be meaningful to the American education system, they had the courses reviewed by ACE. At one point switched over to NCCRS, and they have their science courses are still given at the Jerusalem College for Women, which are allow women to gain acceptance to medical schools here in the United States. With COVID and having to put their courses online, they did it really well. And they decided that instead of in order for the NCCRS credits to help the students, you know, move on with their education and careers, they had to keep affiliating with another college in order to transfer the credits and then get their degrees and be able to move on from there. After, like I said, they were doing their courses online during COVID, they decided that, you know, we do it really well. Why do we keep letting other people give our degrees, our students degrees? So they decided to take this extra step. And they, in September of 2022, incorporated a nonprofit, Ma'alot Institutes of Torah, and are pursuing this avenue, opening up in Arizona in order to be able to facilitate teaching the courses that they have a lot of experience giving, and then being able to actually grant their own degrees. And I just want to, this is a very niche market that we are focusing on. There is a admissions requirement in terms of reading Hebrew. It's really geared towards Orthodox Jewish men and women that are looking for separately to be able to have high quality education and pursue degrees, get women to be able to break the glass ceiling in terms of some of their opportunities in our community and pursue great careers while still being able to maintain a community and their surroundings according to the principles and values that we hold close to us.
Thank you. So you mentioned Ma'alot Educational Network, and I was wondering if you could elaborate on, you know, and I tried to going through the Ma'alot website, the Ma'alot Educational Network website, just trying to discern whether there is what the relationship would be with Ma'alot Institutes of Torah.
It's basically that is the former entity, and that is where this was born from. But they're not really connected any longer, except they're good friends.
So, but in terms of either programs or you know, any of the either degree programs themselves or certificates or individual courses, would you be relying on either instructors or course materials or other resources from Ma'alot Education Network?
I mean, some of those curriculums and course materials are coming from there.
And
from the past experiences, some of the instructors may be the same, but those courses are given as like non-collegiate course providing courses where they would have to get them transferred over to another college in order to be meaningful.
Okay.
It's a degree.
And so I guess because in your application, the institutes are planning to offer a very wide range of courses. And I'm just wondering do you intend to develop the curricula, the syllabi, and hire the faculty for each one of those? Or are you expecting to have at least some of that from the education network?
I believe some of the instructors will be the same.
Okay. And in the application packet, you list it notes 10 faculty members currently at Ma'alot, right? However, in the also in the board packet, it lists the staff members, administrators. It lists the board members, the resumes of those, but I don't see any for any of the instructors. I don't know if you submitted them, and I don't know either if you can answer that or if staff, have a sense, and I can pull it up.
I'm pretty sure everything that was requested was submitted. I know, like everyone else said, the staff is extremely supportive and helpful in getting through the process. Those did come from Nachama Landisman, who is the chief academic officer. As we explained, she is currently in Israel, and tonight is actually a Jewish holiday, so she wasn't able to be on the meeting. But I don't know if somebody, I'm Pretty sure whatever we had was submitted.
I'm sorry, Dr. Mittman, in the folder, you'll see instructor resumes, which is the LR Form 7. It's under the resume area. There are a number of faculty members that are listed in there that have completed that form. So it's in your folder under resumes, not the owner resumes, but the resume section.
So thank you very much. Sure. Thanks for clarifying that. I'm just going to poke my head through that. Okay. One sec. Okay. Great. Thank you. In the business plan, you anticipate as you start up and before you are accredited through DEAC, small enrollments, and therefore, losses, that compound each year, roughly 600, I can't remember, 670 or so thousand dollars in losses. You've been the beneficiaries of very generous, either one very generous, extremely generous donation, or a number of, generous donations totaling, $500,000. Are you expecting to rely on that over the next 5 years to be able to ramp up the institutes, given the fact that you'll be operating in the red, and other than that $500,000, you don't have any other financial assets?
Right. So obviously, we're just starting. So we always have to start small. We have to start only in Arizona. And so what we anticipate is that, once we get started and then we get accredited, that, we will grow fairly quickly within the community. We are a tight network. So if things are going well, it will spread. We do actually have been talking to some people in the local community. There is a Jewish day school that actually has a bit of a teacher training program where they have college age young women that are there to assist in the classrooms and to help. And they have an interest in partnering with us and helping those young ladies get some courses taken with us. So we do believe that we will build fairly quickly. Obviously, it does take money to get started with that. The original funding is from the president, Rabbi Vogel. He was, and I neglected to mention him in my opening statement. He was a successful businessman that finds passion in good education for our community. And so he has granted those funds to get started with this. So for now, yes, that's what we're working with, but we do believe that it will, the income will come, start slow, but then come fairly quickly.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Questions from other board members? Okay, so hearing none, I'll just say, first of all, thank you for, a very complete packet. And I know, as you've heard from other schools, the staff is really supportive, but, obviously you and your colleagues who put this together were very conscientious. So thank you. And
thank you.
If there's further questions, I will make a motion to approve the conditional non-accredited degree program license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond be maintained. Can I get a second?
Scott Wallace will second.
And Ms. Dubitsky, do you agree to the stipulation of the surety bond, which you've probably already secured?
Okay. Yes.
Hearing that, Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck, I believe she's gone. So Dr. Leck is absent. Mr. Romano.
Aye.
Mr. Romano votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. And Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye with a vote of four ayes, one not voting. The motion passes.
All right. Well, congratulations and Chag Sameach to you.
Thank you so much. And y'all invited for cheesecake.
Yeah, that sounds appealing. We could have cheesecake and we could eat it at the aviation school.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And what I didn't say, we actually are renting our space from a local Jewish high school. And it is going to be, it's going to be a great partnership with the community to have us here. So thank you again so much. And thank you everyone for your assistance.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. All right. Call to the public. First of all, I see, is that Susan Cardullo?
Yes, it is.
Oh, well, it's nice
we,
to see
are
you.
We letting her speak or?
I was going to say.
Well, this is a call to the public. So, well, I should say, so please limit your presentation to 5 minutes.
you know me well. I could go on. I wanted to properly say a big thank you to all of you on the state board and all of the staff. And I wanted to say a proper goodbye to that role. I really, truly valued being a board member for the state board for the last 2 years and missed it already, but I am here in this new capacity. I'm now executive director of the Arizona Private School Association. It is the oldest and largest association of private post-secondary institutions in the state. I proudly take on this role from Fred Lockhart. And I don't know if he came last month to say goodbye. He doesn't like goodbyes, but we had a great send off for him. And I just wanted to reassure all of our all the schools in the state, I'm here for you now. I wanted to congratulate all of the applicants who got approved today and all of the renewals. And I'm just here to enjoy. Thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. As sad as we are that Fred left, having you take over makes it a little bit okay. Mr. Blanchard, do you have a comment?
Yes, Susan, you sound just like Fred. Oh my Lord, he says the exact same stuff when he comes in front of the Lord.
I only worked with him for 22 years, so you know it's new for me. But no, it is really amazing, and I liked hearing one of the schools mention. The aviation school that they work in 11 different states and no state is like Arizona. We're very special. We're very fortunate to have such common sense, fair regulators and schools that want to do the right thing as well. So pleasure.
That's a good note to end on. Are there any other comments from the public? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Have a great holiday, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you.